across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06 on this Wednesday morning, May 15th. That's right, halfway through May already. And another beautiful morning to have you here up north, live from Lake Wissota, from wherever you're listening, across the Civic Media Radio Network, or through the app, or through social media, or by podcast. Thank you for taking the time to be with us this morning. I have got a question for you. It's such a good question. I have to bring Greg back in now. Never mind the temperature in Waukesha. We'll get to it. Greg's there now. Good morning, Greg. Here's my question.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's like down by you.
Okay.
Can you smell the lilacs as they are?
Oh, I didn't when I walked in, but I hope so. I love the smell of lilac. We have a lilac bushes in our backyard. And when I was growing up, there was a lilac bush on our property. And so that smell reminds me of 1440 Cottonwood Drive in Waukesha here.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm. I mean, You only get it for 2 weeks and then it's gone.
Yes, tops. And some places have, you know, very large, you know, lilac bushes in their yards. And if they're along the road, and if you happen to be driving with the windows open or the top down, and you drive through a couple of these neighborhoods and you, it's so great.
It is a, we didn't know we were going to have it at the house. And then when they bloomed the following spring, like I was very happy because, like I said, it is something that reminds me of home. So it just takes me right back to just the mowing the lawn and just being in Waukesha, being a kid. It's very few times I enjoy nostalgia.
There are ups and downs of being somebody involved in politics, a candidate, a legislator, what have you. But I will say that every year when I was knocking on doors as a candidate or as a legislator, and you'd get to one of these neighborhoods when the lilacs were in bloom, my efficiency went way down because you'd be walking kind of briskly from door to door with your clipboard. I'm just kind of lollygagging.
And then
this is great.
Feet floating off the sidewalk. And then whomever had it like, hi, I'm Pat Breitlove. You can have whatever you want. You have lilac bushes. So you want a free state car? It's yours.
Yeah. No, it didn't quite work like that, but it felt so good. And I love that part of spring.
Yeah.
Although the other part of spring is the lawn. And
oh God, my lawn now, oh God, Pat. Oh God,
my lawn is growing an inch an hour this time of year.
I had everything under control in the front yard. And then, you know, we've talked about it before. I have a very busy schedule. I work a lot.
Yes.
And it's not an excuse. It is a reason. I mow the lawn. It looks great. And then I go to work. I look away. It rains 40 times. And then I'm that guy again. Yeah. And my backyard, I'm not doing no mow May, but it certainly does look like it in my backyard.
I can't even imagine, to be honest. I understand the value of it. If people do it, you know, I support that.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't even imagine the McCormick Reaper or the International Harvester Combine that you need at the end of the month. It's just amazing how much we had to go through. Unless you're going to bag it, and I don't bag it. I want to mulch it in. I want to be, you know, good that way.
That's the problem is I have to bag the first round because it just does not mulch. It just spits up all over the yard, and then that stuff dies. Clump. Yep, clump. Mm-hmm. And that stuff dies on top of the
causes
lawn.
Causes a dead spot, right?
Exactly. Right. So I have a very specific plan now, which is I raise the wheels up so it's taller than I want, but I bag all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Or no, I'm sorry. I push that out onto the lawn. And then I go over it again with the bagger to get rid of all of the major, major excess. And then I have to throw it away, which I don't like doing, but I don't have a choice. I'm tired of having
compost.
Dead spots.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I am with you. And if you do no mow May, more power to you. But I also feel like if you want to do 1 month and you want to really make an impact, you should just do it all the time then. Because does a month of not doing that have a particular and long-lasting positive result? That's the question I have.
Well, you've really poked a bee's nest here now, alluding to the reason for no mow May. The pollinators, Greg, it's the pollinators.
I know, and I'm not saying don't do it or you're wrong for doing it. It's a question based in pure curiosity.
I know. And so for, again, for however you take care of your lawn, now you've had a lawn chat with Greg and Pat. Here's how we do it. It's 45 here on Lake Wasota, 44 in Hayward, 36 in Park Falls. Wausau's at 42, Green Bay's at 42. La Crosse, 47 this morning. It's 45 in Rapids, 49 in Oshkosh, 46 in Madison, 43 in Waukesha, where Greg sits to monitor a show that has been coming together like by the moment. You know, some days you have your guest like booked a week or two in advance, some days it's like, well, time for me to go to bed. Ding, up comes an email. Hey, I can be your guest tomorrow. Oh, okay, great. Well, let me just tear down this show and rebuild. We've got a lot going on here. But here's what I know. I know it's Wednesday, so Melissa Baldoff will be here with today's climate check, and we'll be talking about a few different subjects there, including the insurance premiums going up at American Family Field because of a changing climate, and you know, the more flash floods that we get, and the baseball stadium's right by the Menominee River. So we'll talk to Melissa about that and other subjects coming up. We'll have a guest in our 7 o'clock hour talking about how a drag story hour planned for the Milwaukee suburb of Menominee Falls had to be canceled because of threats of violence, because some people are the worst. And then at 7:30, we will continue our discussion kind of from this hour on climate and energy sustainability by talking to a superintendent from one Southeast Wisconsin district about their electric school buses that they recently acquired. We'll also play back Selena Heller's report on a community in western Wisconsin that now has electric-powered school buses, again, as a way to cut down on emissions and to be cleaner and greener and lower cost eventually for the district, for taxpayers, and more. Todd Alba will be joining us as well to talk about what's coming up on his program later today. In sports, the Milwaukee Brewers were playing the Pittsburgh Pirates last night. I actually missed it, Greg, and I'll get to the highlight in a second here. I missed it because one of the things I can't do is watch late night TV. And so when I heard that last night was going to be the 10th anniversary of Jimmy Fallon hosting the Tonight Show, they're going to do a little primetime special. So we watched, you know, about half of that or so. And that really is the way to watch late night TV, because there's boring guests and there's jokes that don't land and things like that. And so if you're just going to watch the best parts of it, like that's how I want to do it. So that was 10 years of Jimmy Fallon squeezed into about 75 minutes for me. Well, which is right up my alley.
10 minutes of Jimmy Fallon, 10 minutes. Oh my gosh. 10 years of Jimmy Fallon, 10 years of Seth Meyers, 10 years of Stephen Colbert. They all came in at the same time. So it's like big old milestones. And Jimmy Kimmel sitting there going, I've been here for a while.
Yeah. Look, this really is, if you are a late night TV watcher, I firmly believe this is one of the best periods ever. These are good people. They're running good shows. I just, I obviously can't stay up that late. And, again, as you've seen me head into my, older grumpy years, it's like, oh, this guy is boring. Gotta move on. Whereas before I'd sit there and I'd watch everything top to bottom and kind of critique it all. But I try not to get that way where it's like, oh, if only David Letterman were back here again. No, that show was great for its time, but this is a good era.
Yeah.
And I'll say as well that the main hosts that you listed off right now, when they all came together to do a podcast, back when, they were all
had the writers on strike.
Yeah. I mean, that was really great. In other eras, you wouldn't have had that level of cooperation at all.
Johnny Carson, if you were on a TV show on another network, he'd be like, my next guest is on a TV show on another network. He just would not even mention it. It's like,
no.
All right, calm down.
Yep. So it's a good bunch. And I really enjoyed Fallon from a best of perspective. So that was a good thing to watch. But it kept me from watching all of the Brewers game. They were ahead when I turned away, and they stayed that way as they beat the Pittsburgh Pirates 4-3 last night. The Brewers scored all four of their runs in the second inning, including Sal Frelick hitting his first home run of the season. And then later made two diving catches in center field. Here's one of them.
To center field, Frelick on the move. Frelick's back, and he's got it!
That reminds me of the old. That reminds me of the old Lorenzo Cain days.
Oh, yeah. Talk about a guy fun to watch.
Oh yeah,
very. Yep. So yeah, Sal Frelick was the human highlight reel last night. On the not so great side, first baseman Rhys Hoskins is on the 10-day injured list with a strained right hamstring. And I don't know that anybody comes back from a strained hamstring in 10 days.
A lot of times
it feels like it's going to be 10 months before let's not do
this Giannis thing where we're saying in 10 days and then like halfway through the season. Yeah. All right, just be honest with us.
Yeah, we're okay. It happens. Owen Miller's been called up from AAA. And the Brewers will be playing this afternoon to wrap up the series with the Pirates. Robert Gasser gets the start. I believe it's his second start. He got his first start this past weekend, and I'd forgotten entirely. I'm like, who's Robert Gasser? Well, he's one of the pitchers that we got in the trade for who's the reliever we sent down to the San Diego Padres.
Oh God, I can't remember his name right now.
Look at how we will never forget you, Bert Favre. Anyway, so one of the pitches that we picked up a couple years ago now, and said, "Well, okay, let's see if this works out." And after years, a couple of years toiling away in the minor leagues, Gasser had a really good start, and we'll get the call again this morning. You can catch the pregame starting at 11:35 this morning on Civic Media stations in Richland Center and in Racine, Kenosha, and Oshkosh, and 98Q Country in Park Falls. And then the Brewers are off tomorrow, but that's because they're about to start their first real long road trip of the season. They go to Houston, then to Miami, then to Boston. They won't be back home until Memorial Day when they open up a 7-game homestand, 4 against the Cubs starting Memorial Day, and then 3 more against the Chicago White Sox. So apologies in advance about your Chicago buddy sleeping on your couch all that week. Please make him buy the beer and the groceries in advance. We will update. We will unpack the news coming up in just a bit. Live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network. This is Up North News Radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Greg looks like he's going to tell me something that I forgot earlier.
Was it Ashby?
No.
Okay.
I
tried. I looked it up. I did the Googling.
I just love people screaming at the radio right now. We'll tell you what you're screaming next. You're
text us.
On this day in 1975, Fleetwood Mac played a concert in El Paso, Texas. The band had been around for quite a while, but this was their first concert with brand new members Lindsey Buckingham and Stevie Nicks. It worked out pretty well for them. Rhiannon here from Stevie Nicks, that was one of their first monster hits after she joined the band. More in today's history lesson coming up in just a bit. Here's another history lesson, Greg. Brewers relievers who went to San Diego. I'll take Josh Hader, please.
I thought you said the minors. You said they sent him down on the minors. I heard that for some reason, and then I typed in Texas for some reason.
Oh.
I'm so tired, Pat.
it's been a week. Lemon, yeah, it's Wednesday.
It's Wednesday. Hump day sucks.
It's the Canadian wildfire smoke. That's my new answer to everything. Everything.
That sounds like a really good strain from Michigan. I'll take it. But taken out to that Canadian wildfire smoke.
Maybe that's it. Maybe there's something in the Upper Peninsula that's moving this away. You know, I mentioned yesterday, let's build a wall, and let's, you know, not with Mexico, but with Canada. Let's try to keep the smoke out of there, please. Anyway, if you'd like to correct us or fill in any of our other memory gaps, 855-75-CIVIC is the number, 855-75-CIVIC. You can call it, you can text it, you can use the Civic Media app as well to reach out to us. So the Wisconsin legislature, state Senate, had a meeting yesterday. They were in session, but as promised and as previewed here, they did not release the money for contaminated drinking water. Instead, it was all a political stunt designed to hold a vote to override some of Governor Evers' vetoes of some of their bills seeking to micromanage the executive branch. And then they had the audacity to get on their high horse and make it sound as if it's the governor who shouldn't have veto power. Now, if you don't think that a president or a governor should have a veto, then, well, maybe you should get an amendment going through the legislature and then to the voters and see about getting rid of that whole system of checks and balances, if that's what works for you. But right now, governors do have the power of the veto. So you can pass a bill. It might get vetoed in its entirety, or here in Wisconsin, it might be vetoed, in just some parts of it. And a governor has to give you a reason. And this governor did give a reason for the vetoes that he made to a couple of key bills. One of them was the money to clean up contaminated water in Wisconsin. And again, bear in mind, the bills that were vetoed were not necessary because the money is already in the state budget. The legislature already approved the money. I cannot emphasize that enough. But then the legislature set up this rule for themselves that says, well, we don't actually release the money unless this committee, the Joint Finance Committee, says so, and we can micromanage how that money has to be spent, which is just not something you see anyplace else and frankly didn't see very much of in Wisconsin as well. It goes to those various agencies, Department of Transportation, Department of Natural Resources, whatever the case may be. They get the allocation and then the people who actually work in those fields make the determination to spend money that's in the budget. So there's this budget line to clean up PFAS, industrial chemicals in drinking water, and to go after the polluters. Well, Republican legislators passed a second bill, one that was not necessary, that said, hey, by the way, for that money that we already approved, we don't want the DNR going after the people who put the chemicals there. We'd rather side with industry. So please sign this bill, Governor, so that the DNR does not go after the polluters. Under the guise of protecting innocent landowners whose land got dumped on, when those safeguards already exist. But what they're looking to do is take away the language and the ability to go after industrial polluters. Needless to say, the governor vetoed that bill and said, guys, you already passed the money. You approved the money. Let's get the money out to clean up the water. And Republican legislators, again, got on their high horse and said, nope, the water can stay contaminated unless you let us override your veto. But again, governors have vetoes. If you don't like it, get a new governor. But you tried that already. And the voters said, we don't want Scott Walker anymore, and we don't want Tim Michaels anymore. We want this guy as governor in part because he's going to be a check and balance on you. And then there was the bill to allocate some funds to the Chippewa Valley to deal with two different hospital closures. Again, I won't go into all the details on that one, but again, the governor's veto provided more flexibility. The original allocation of money said, well, it's got to be used for ERs in Eau Claire and Chippewa counties. And the governor's veto allowed it to be used for other things like, obstetrical services and in other places because the hospital closure is also affecting people in Dunn County and Clark County and Barron County. And Republicans, again, have the gall to call that a slush fund because heaven forbid folks in Dunn County or Barron County are also assisted during this medical crisis. And I would single out particularly the state senator from the area who sits in the seat that I had occupied a long time ago, Jesse James, who again could have been more of a bipartisan force to stand with other Chippewa Valley lawmakers and say, guys, this is not a slush fund. This is to help the people in my area. Let's release this. And instead, he plays along with the Republican Party's games that would rather have contaminated water and money not used for health care in his district, sending a bill that they did not even consult Democratic Chippewa Valley lawmakers on. They want so much to have a my way or the highway approach. And the temper tantrum, the way they are stamping their little feet when they can't get their way 100% of the time is absolutely childish. And then it got more childish. While they were debating the hospital bill for the Chippewa Valley, Republicans abruptly ended the session, called for the vote, said, "We're done. We're done." State Senator Jeff Smith, a Democrat from the Chippewa Valley, was livid, trying to, again, make the argument why they should not be overriding, attempting to override the governor's veto, and just gets cut off as he's trying to make the case to the Senate president. And we discover later that the reason they cut off debate was not so much that they were just tired and wanted to go home, although that could have been an easy reason with this bunch, but one of their members had to catch a flight, is what the Senate Republican leader told a reporter for Wisp Politics. And of course, if one of the Republicans had left, well, then they'd no longer have enough votes to override a veto, which wasn't going to work anyway, because in the assembly, Republicans don't have the votes to override a veto. So they didn't really have to cut off the session. They didn't really have to appear, shall we say, jerk-like about it, but they didn't really have any problem going there. They didn't have any problem putting out press releases afterwards saying, "Oh, well, this is the governor's fault that, you know, we gave him, you know, that he's allowed to have a veto." That's not how it works. And it's the audacity and it's the arrogance that comes with gerrymandered maps, which thankfully for many Wisconsin voters is going to end this November. Melissa Baldoff has this week's climate check. Coming up next, you're up north. I'm Pat Kreitlow.
It's electric.
It's time for our weekly climate check with Melissa Baldoff. We've got quite a grab bag of stories to pass along. Some big news for renewable energy and the electric grid, making sure that, you know, all that new power from cleaner sources can get from point A to point your house. Melissa, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, thanks. We're actually going to start a little closer to home before we talk about the electric grid. A story that we hadn't been able to talk about yet, and I'm glad you reminded me of it, because it was a few weeks back now that American Family Field learned, as did the Brewers and other entities involved, that their insurance premiums have gone up again, and a changing climate is, of course, playing a role in that, given that there's a river that flows not too far from the ballpark. So give folks a little bit of background on what that's about.
Yeah, you know, when we say that climate change is impacting everything, it truly is. It's even impacting baseball, impacting the Brewers potentially here. So the district that the Wisconsin Professional Baseball Park District that, you know, operates the stadium, that publicly funded part of what's going on there, is going to have to spend an additional $275,000 for its share of the annual premium. So that is a hefty amount to be paying. That's on top of another $515,000 that had already been set aside. It's a pretty heavy expense. It's a 55% increase. And that's just, the stadium district share. The right. Brewers are going to pay a part.
It's a big number. It's a big number, but I mean, I had entirely forgotten about the flooding that had occurred there in June of 2009 after, you know, huge downpours, you know, during a very hot summer stretch there that flooded the ballpark. And of course, that causes lots of very expensive damage. And, you know, as storms and flash floods have increased, you know, that's what the premiums are going to do, too. That's just one of those things we continue to have to recognize, Melissa.
Right. It happens to homes, to businesses, to farms, to our roadways. You know, the effects of a changing climate are causing these severe flood instances. They're happening all over the place. So like you said, that happened in 2009, caused a lot of damage. Later that same year, the Wisconsin Department of Transportation built a berm on the highway to help hopefully mitigate any further damage. In July of 2010, there was another storm that flooded the road, but that berm prevented water from getting into the ballpark. So, it, you know, it did do its job, but, you know, the risk is there for further damage.
Right. But you know what that berm is? That building that berm is an example of flood mitigation and resilience, which takes us to our next topic, where Governor Evers, again, this is going back a couple few weeks here, but the governor signed a bill that is designed to promote flood resilience in other places, you know, ways that help keep our wetlands healthy, because those wetlands are probably the best sponge we have from an increasing number of bad flash floods.
Exactly. And, you know, this is something that is, you know, going to help save people money in the long run. It's going to help, you know, mitigate the risk of damage. It's going to protect really important infrastructure and really help, you know, just keep our local communities, local governments, you know, make them better prepared before an emergency happens and keep them safe before an emergency happens. And then if there is an emergency, you know, make sure they have the tools to recover safely. But this is all about preventing damage because, you know, we have hit a point where we are going to be seeing these, you know, 100-year floods more often. We're seeing them every 10 years, in some cases every 5 years. So we have to be taking these steps to build resilience in these communities, you know, fund these restoration projects, you know, assess flood risk, and help really mitigate the damage and help them avoid the worst possible outcomes.
Right. And for folks who say, well, just build more berms and build more culverts to keep the water from getting there. But when you do that, the water just, you know, starts to flow that much faster going somewhere else. It's eventually got to go someplace. And so to the extent that some of these communities, yes, you mitigate it in some areas, maybe with, you know, berms and culverts and things like that. But if you can also find ways to get it toward, you know, more of a natural area that may not be a wetland, you know, most of the time, but is, you know, there when you need it, you know, you're going to have a lot less damage to property. You're going to, you know, reduce the amount of, you know, flooded streets, cars, people that could be washed away, all of these things that any given community can do, you know, to assess their flood risk and you know, try to avoid the damage from it. The example I've used before was my first earmark as a legislator right in Chippewa Falls. Was there's, you know, now when you come into town, into downtown over the bridge, there's kind of this green space, there's a park, there's a little band shell there. There used to be some businesses there. And they would flood every couple of years or so, you know, when Duncan Creek would back up by the dam. And now since that time, you know, we helped raise the funds to purchase the property, create the park. And every so often, almost every year, there's a little bit of spring flooding and people go, oh, look at that. The park flooded again. Like, yeah, that's by design, because that way the businesses didn't flood. There are no homes mm-hmm. there to flood. And if you can get more communities to do that, like you said, it's going to save money for all of us.
Exactly. And, you know, the other great thing about, you know, these efforts that are going to, you know, shore up our wetlands is that this is going to really help restore habitats for our wildlife. You know, so this is a win-win that we are going to be helping to restore our wetlands. You know, we've lost, you know, up to 50% of historic wetlands in Wisconsin over the years. So by helping to restore them, we can, those will absorb rain, absorb flood water, help avoid the damage to businesses and homes, and you know, create a better habitat for wildlife. So it's really a win-win all around.
Okay, so the big news that has come up this week is at the federal level, it's a change in the way that basically the entire electric grid for our country is planned and funded. And again, this is about longer term planning, not just thinking about, you know, the next, you know, rainfall, but what are things going to look like years down the road? And believe it or not, there hasn't been that kind of long range planning in our electric grid. But Melissa, tell us about the new rules that in doing better planning, it means it's going to be easier to hook up renewable sources like wind and solar.
Yeah, this is really, really exciting news. You know, it's one of those, you know, regulatory changes that, you know, some people might not think sound super sexy, but this is actually a huge sweeping change to how we operate that will really spur a lot of positive change in how we're able to operate wind and solar energy, how we're able to expand that. We've talked previously in different segments, you know, a number of times about how, you know, our grids are not just not where they need to be. And this is going to be, you know, really the most significant attempt in years to upgrade and expand the infrastructure. And that the reason that it's gone so slowly is because the operators don't plan long term, like you said. And so what's going to happen with this new federal rule is that grid operators are going to have to plan 20 years out. They're going to have to account for factors like extreme weather, like changes in the mix of energy use. They're going to have to account for states that are putting in requirements for wind and solar power. So they're not going to just be able to say, you know, we're just going to just plan for things how we've always done them. And so it goes. They're going to have to look at a much wider variety of factors and take those into account looking 20 years down the road. They're going to have to look at, you know, if they need to add new lines, if they need to, you know, look at reducing the risk of blackouts, if they need to try to lower electricity costs, they really have to be planning long term. And that's going to be the requirement here. And that is going to be just a very significant change for how we're going to be able to expand.
And I think we've mentioned this once or twice, but it bears repeating that there are folks who are going to be happy that, you know, these new standards will increase the amount of energy we get from renewable sources. But it does mean that there are going to be more high voltage power lines being built to connect, you know, these wind farms, these solar farms, these other instances. So while there will be longer range planning for renewable sources, you can't do that without, you know, the high voltage lines that get them to a population center. And so I'm sure people will see that aspect of it as well. And it's part of that trade-off for, you know, cleaner, greener energy is the distribution part of this equation.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that's gonna, you know, be a part of it. And, you know, I just think that, you know, and change is always going to be hard. But this is going to ultimately be something that is going to benefit everybody. And the fact that there are going to be, we know there are going to be, there are people and industries that are against this. But this is going to be, and these are going to be changes that benefit everybody.
Yeah, there'll be a net positive here, but of course there will be people unhappy with this, including this vote to change the grid rules, which was done by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. It passed on a 2-to-1 vote. The two Democratic members voted in favor, and I had to point out the vote against it was from a Republican, Mark Christie, who said, The new rule is unfair because states that want more renewable energy would now be able to pass along some of the costs of grid upgrades to their neighbors. He said that this is, quote, intended to facilitate a massive transfer of wealth from consumers to for-profit special interests, particularly wind and solar developers. It's, again, it's just the same old of why you would want to be against renewable energy. You know, who are you trying to protect in trying to turn renewable energy sources into the bad guys? It defies explanation, but we've sure seen it a lot in politics, Melissa.
Right. I mean, I think we know who they're trying to protect, and who they're trying to protect are the fossil fuel companies, who are making a whole lot of money off of energy sources that are not renewable. Right. That is who they are trying to protect. But it is a completely nonsensical argument. And I think that it is one that, you know, we continue to see public support grow for renewable energy. And, you know, I think even in red states, there will continue to be more of a demand for, you know, renewable energy resources, especially as we see more and more funding from the Inflation Reduction Act reach mm-hmm. communities. And these big projects that Republican lawmakers voted against are going to fund, you know, there's going to be some really wonderful job creation in the districts of Republican lawmakers who voted against the IRA. So I think it's going to get more and more popular.
Oh, without a doubt. That's our climate check for this week with Melissa Baldoff. Melissa, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Today's history lesson is next. You're up north. Yes, we are swaying. No, we're not doing the Saturday Night Live version of it.
No, we are not.
No, we are not. This is Paul McCartney and Stevie Wonder with the number one song this day in 1982.
Remember when we thought we could solve racism with a pop song?
Yeah, that did it.
We won, everybody.
Yeah.
Says a white guy.
Melissa Kay is here from Locally Grown Radio.
WFHR,
Wisconsin Rapids. I'm sorry, the award-winning.
Yeah. Show respect.
Yeah.
Yes, I was gone last week because I had so many fans coming at me. I just couldn't make it on your show.
I understand. Congratulations.
No, it was fun. We were honored to be there.
The Wisconsin Broadcasters Association rightly honoring you and your team for all sorts of work, right?
Yeah. We got promos. We got a radio show. We got best interview.
Fantastic.
You took home some hardware. Nice.
Yeah, we did.
Without a doubt. Was there a red carpet there? Did they do
no.
paparazzi or anything? Okay.
I don't know. We did paparazzi. Catherine gave us all special sunglasses that had Civic Media stickers on the sides.
That's adorable.
We were the coolest new kids in town.
Back to the music here. Now, that was one way to have kind of a cross-cultural song, Ebony and Ivory.
Yeah.
It's not my favorite.
My favorite
version of it happened 4 years later when Run DMC did this little mix with Aerosmith. I loved this so much when it came out. Here they go. I have to say, at that point, 1986, I still wasn't sure what to make of rap. And like, is this a fad? Is it going to come and go or whatnot? And then you see this video with Aerosmith, and you're like, okay, I'm in. This is it. You loved it. The imagination,
yeah.
The creativity, everything was great.
This song saved Aerosmith's career.
Oh,
they were
say
in,
that, yeah.
Yeah, they were nothing back then. Like, they were many times to rehab, failed singles.
Yep.
And also, rap music didn't cover these songs. They usually sampled them, and the fact that they were actually saying the lyrics, and I think Jam Master Jay, Rev Run, who's like, he's like, we didn't understand these lyrics. They made no sense to us.
Which makes sense. No. But it was on this day that Run DMC's Raising Hell album was released, this day in 1986. On this day in 1990, Mariah Carey was brand new on your radio. Her first single, Vision of Love, came out on this day 34 years ago. Kind of starts off pretty, but by the end, when you hear it all, once again, kind of like the previous song, you're like, shut up and take my money. I'm in. Yeah. I'm in. Who is this person? Now, obviously, she became almost a caricature later of, you know, what a diva is.
Yeah.
But when she was kind of new and fresh on the scene and you hear this voice, you're just like, wow. So this song was released this day. It would be climbed to number one by August and put her on track to becoming the best-selling female artist of the 90s. The city of Las Vegas was founded on this day in 1905. I mentioned earlier that Fleetwood Mac played their first concert with new members Lindsey Buckingham and Stevie Nicks on this day in 1975. And Richard and Maurice McDonald, two brothers, opened the first McDonald's restaurant on this day in 1940. Melissa, have you ever seen the Michael Keaton movie, The Founder, about Ray Kroc and McDonald's?
No, I have not.
I would
eat at McDonald's.
We need to. We're
Thank now you for the golf clap. Thank
now
you.
We're on a quest to find that one listener out there who has never eaten at a McDonald's. And we
oh, you know, they're smug about it, too.
Oh, no doubt.
I guess. The movie is, it's a telling of the story, mostly from the Ray Kroc point of view, that, you know, he's this business genius who first started working with these brothers and then eventually turned McDonald's into the household name that it is today. And because the anniversary was coming up, I noticed some social media posts about the movie and about Ray Kroc and about his genius and his vision and everything. And eventually, a few other people were coming at it from my point of view, posting, going, no, it showed he was a thief and a jerk.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
He basically stole McDonald's from the McDonald's brothers, and this is the story of how they did it, which I know it sounds like, well, I'm not going to watch that movie. It's depressing. It's fascinating. It really is. I'd highly recommend it.
Nick Offerman's fantastic in it. He plays such a non-Nick Offerman character. And
I love when he does that, too. Yeah. He did that in Civil War, by the way, which is out in theaters now, too. He's like, oh, wait, that's Nick Offerman. You know, so he's really showing off his range on that. Let's see. I got one more tune for you from 31 years ago. This day in 1993, Janet Jackson had the number one hit.
Oh, poetry.
Usher Gorgeous and Will I Am collabed on OMG on this day in 2010, which went to number one. And composer Mike Oldfield is 71 today. He wrote the song Tubular Bells that you heard in The Exorcist, and we'll play that one a little bit later on this morning. Melissa Kay, what else is happening at the award-winning locally grown radio WFHR? And
well,
friends?
We have new mayor Matt Zacker is going to be on our Midday Magazine show today. From 3 to 4. And then very, very soon, I think we're one step closer to revealing our new surprise secret announcement that I'm not supposed to talk about. And I'm not telling you guys anything about.
How excited she is about
this. I'm so excited.
What, like, is it a new show? Is it a new personality? Is it
a lot of new?
Are you giving an award its own program? Like, you know, like, here's our award. Just
she's doing that thing where she's clapping her fingertips together, like, oh, if only I could tell you.
But sure.
I'm excited.
Is there
We're working on names and imaging right now.
Names and imaging?
Someone's having a baby?
No. It's not a gender reveal or anything like that, right, Melissa? No.
We talked about that in the Todd Alba show. That's not happening in this state for me. Heck no. Okay, well,
we just needed to make sure. So we don't know exactly the when yet that you're going to spring this
I would say sometime in June.
Sometime in maybe, June.
Well, the actual.
And yet you're this excited already?
Well, okay. But there's a lot of work you got to do behind the scenes, Pat. You should know this.
All right. No, I do. No,
I would say very soon. Maybe in the next week or two, we'll be able to tell more.
Very good. All right. Thank you, Melissa. Appreciate it very much. We're so excited for you now.
Thank you.
This is a big deal that's coming up here.
I'm excited.
We'll go over the national day calendar coming up. We'll also hear about an unfortunate development in Menominee Falls as threats of violence halt a drag story hour, and our homeroom segment on electric school buses growing in use around Wisconsin. This is Up North News Radio, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlow.